Welcome in. It is Jared and the GM, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Ryan Porth in for Jared Stillman this afternoon on your drive home. It is Ask the GM, brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors of Nashville, 615-737-1025. The best question to Floyd will win a pair of tickets to see Michael Bublé at Bridgestone Arena on Friday, July 19th. So 615-737-1025. If you want to jump in and ask the GM, our mastermind, Floyd Reese, a question about anything. If you want to ask him about a question about the Preds, if you want to ask him a question about the Titans, about his general managing days in the National Football League, you are open and welcome to all questions.
Yes, I am.
There, Floyd. So if you want to jump in and weigh in and ask him a question, you might be able to go to Michael Bublé at Bridgestone on July 19th. Ian, we want to make official?
When the GM speaks,
a little bit of the personality.
Everybody listens.
They understand every situation.
And we're giving you exclusive access to Pick the Brain of former Titans GM Floyd Reese.
Brought to you by Pella Windows of Nashville.
Call 615-737-1025 now.
You're never going to make a mistake.
This is Ask the GM.
All right, let's get to the phones. Steve has been waiting patiently to ask Floyd a question for Ask the GM. Steve, welcome into Jared and the GM.
Thank you for having me. Floyd, back when you were in charge, which I enjoyed those years, by the way.
Well, thank you.
If you were the GM still, how many people in the league do you think could step, as far as quarterbacks, do you think could step in where people didn't have the same questions that we always have about Marcus? Because we always talk about Marcus's receivers being young or being hurt or whatever. But if we had not necessarily the elite quarterback, but just the average quarterback, do you think we would still have the same questions?
Sorry to cut you off there, Steve.
Yeah, good question. I think you would. I mean, I think the truth is Marcus is right there in the middle. And the truth is that there are very, very, very few young quarterbacks that will get beyond where Marcus is now. And that's what's the scary part about the league. That's why quarterbacks are so valuable. That's why people do dumb things during the draft every year to get a shot at a quarterback that they think might be the guy. And I think you only have to look at the teams in the league, and the teams in the league that are winning and winning consistently, you will find they all have a quarterback. You look at the Saints with Drew Brees. You look at New England. You look at the Green Bay's. You look at Atlanta's. And those teams all have quarterbacks, and they go out there, and they can win on a weekly basis. And so people are willing to sell their soul to come up with a quarterback or a quarterback prospect they think will be the guy that will lead them to that point. Get them to the point that, okay, I know I have the quarterback position taken care of. Now I have to find a running back. Much easier to find a running back than a quarterback. I have to find a tight end. Much easier to find a tight end than a quarterback. And you go through the roster, and pretty soon you feel like, okay, you know, we've got a chance to put together a pretty good roster here because, in fact, I have the quarterback. And Marcus fits right in there with, and I don't even care who you're talking about, people like Mahomes. People are going to say Mahomes is on his way to the Hall of Fame, and after 1 year, they're probably right. You know, let's talk about Mahomes in 3 or 4 years. Let's see what Mahomes is like without the home run hitters that he had last year on the team. Not that he won't be great, and I'm not saying that he won't be great because he might be, but I'm saying that Vince Young, who we had right here in town, got accomplished every bit of what he had accomplished. Vince Young was Rookie of the Year. Vince Young was the first rookie to play in a Pro Bowl as a quarterback. He made the playoffs a couple of times. He did all of those things.
He was the next big thing.
He was the next big thing. For 3 or 4 years, he was the next big thing. And then all of a sudden, you know, it fell apart for whatever reason.
Threw his shoulder pads in the stands.
Yeah, you know, and I'm not pointing fingers. I'm not blame. I'm just saying that those things happen. And I think those that whenever we look at these young quarterbacks and get really, really excited about them, we have to keep in mind that we had whoever you want to talk about as a young superstar, you know, anybody that you want to name, you had that guy here in town for 3 or 4 years, and we saw how that worked out. So I would always use that as kind of a sounding board for when you think, okay, Kansas City's got it made. They're going to be in the Super Bowl next 7 years in a row. Not so fast.
Let's go to Keith up next on Ask the GM. Keith, welcome into Jared and the GM.
Hey, guys. Florida got a question, but first I wanted to talk about Marcus's injury in his elbow. I think Johnny Unitas had the same injury or thereabouts in 1968. Earl Morrill played just about the whole season for the LA. Took him to the Super Bowl to get beat by the Jets.
Yeah.
But my question is, Floyd, I was thinking about Sharif Finch. I believe he was an undrafted free agent that we signed. Who is the best free agent or undrafted free agent signing that you ever had? And I'll hang up and listen.
Wow. I don't know. I'd have to think about that one. Undrafted free agent. You know what?
I'm going to try to look that up, see if there's some sort of list compiled.
I'm going to guess that it would be maybe a Josh Evans. I don't think he was drafted, or we didn't draft him. Josh was pretty good. I don't know. Let us we'll research that a little bit and try to figure that out.
Was Drew Bennett?
Oh yeah,
drafted?
Drew Bennett was undrafted. He was.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, there was a pretty good.
Well,
one.
That was by far your best one.
Yeah, I mean,
the whole list. I mean, Drew Bennett was awesome.
Yeah, he ended up being a 1,000-yard receiver for a couple of years there and played pretty good. Yeah, way to go, Ian. Nice job.
On the spot there.
Yeah.
So far behind the glass.
He's
you know
on
which
it.
One was my favorite?
Who was that?
Gino Gadulli, quarterback, Cincinnati. He was a record setter.
That may have been the only guy at Cincinnati we ever had on the roster.
ever, yes. You know what? I came out to a training camp once with my Gino Gadulli jersey, and I had it hanging over the fence.
Yeah.
And it was his day to sign. He was on long list. And I had it over the fence, and he beelined right over to me. Said, I saw that jersey from a mile away. And then, like, 2 weeks later, he was cut. Let's go to Ryan, another Ryan. Let's go to Ryan up next on Ask the GM. Ryan, welcome in.
All right, Floyd, I got the question of the day for you right here.
Yes, sir.
Do you think the Titans will win the Super Bowl this year? I'll hang up and listen.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's The hard part about the Super Bowl, and people fail to realize this, is that a lot of times, I mean, think about the number of experts, so-called experts, that we have that will get on radio, TV at the start of the season, and who they will select to go to the Super Bowl, and how many of those guys are right. I mean, it just never, ever happens.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, really difficult to do. There are so many things and so many ups and downs and so many, you know, a team getting hot in the playoffs. A wild card team, New York Giants, the year that they beat the New England Patriots and their 16-0 perfect season was a wild card. You know, they get into the playoffs, boom, they end up in the Super Bowl. They got the helmet catch. They're Super Bowl champs. Now, what are the chances of that happening? Not very high, but it did happen. So,
what if Darius Jennings made a catch like that to win the Super Bowl this year?
There you go. We would take it, right?
Yes, in a heartbeat.
I think it's going to be a stretch. I mean, it's going to be hard. But, I mean, I don't think anybody that has a chance to make it to the playoffs, you can't count them out. So I'll let it stay there.
Some good questions in this first segment of Ask the GM.
Yeah.
But I think there can be another level to some of these questions.
All right.
We have Michael Bublé tickets on the line, Bridgestone Arena, July 19th. The best question to Floyd will win a pair of tickets to see Michael Bublé So call in 615-737-1025. Have your questions ready for Floyd Reese. Reese, I don't know why I said Reese. For Floyd Reese, more of Ask the GM, brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors of Nashville. Coming up next.
Jerry Glanville used to call, people will misspell my last name, and I'm spelled like the candy bar, R-E-S-E, but they'll spell it R-E-E-C-E.
Yeah.
So every time I'd get a letter from like that, Jerry say, hey, Floyd Rikisi, you got a letter here.
Well, more Ask the GM is coming up next. I'm Ryan Porth in for Jared Stillman this afternoon, alongside the GM, Floyd Reese. More to come here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. It is Ask the GM, brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors of Nashville. We have loaded lines ready to talk to Floyd Reese. The best question to Floyd will win a pair of tickets to see Michael Bublé July 19th at Bridgestone Arena. You ready, Floyd?
Yes, sir.
The onslaught of calls.
Here we go.
Let's go to Scott, who's been waiting patiently. Scott, welcome into Jared and the GM.
Afternoon, gentlemen. Floyd, just want you to put a puzzle together for me.
Okay.
Using only active quarterbacks, build your ideal quarterback for eyes, his vision, his size, IQ, arms, and legs. I appreciate it, and I'll listen off air. Thanks a bunch.
Thank you, Scott.
Okay. Of the quarterbacks that I know, pretty well, I would take the brain, the competitiveness, and the work ethic of Tom Brady. I think I would take the athleticism of Aaron Rodgers. Mm. And that would include, feet and the ability to run and do those things. Arm strength to me is not a really big deal. Arm versatility, I think, is big, which, takes me right to probably Mahomes and his ability to throw the ball from so many different directions. And maybe when it comes to escapability, maybe like Watson, Deshaun Watson or somebody along those lines.
What about vision?
Vision, I mean, I'd probably have to go back to Brady for vision. I mean, that's a lot on Brady, I know, but.
I'm a little surprised you didn't pick Drew Brees.
The problem with Drew Brees, and vision would probably be a good one for Drew Brees. Drew Brees is very much like Brady, in my opinion, as far as work ethic and smarts and knowing what to do and do all the things, in just a little bit smaller package. And that's why I always go with Tom. Plus, I know Tom so much better. I mean, I think Drew is every bit as nice and good as Tom is. I just don't know for sure.
Okay. Let's go to Alan, who wants to ask Floyd a question about the Titans. Alan, welcome in to Ask the GM.
Oh, thank you. Floyd, I know you like the hog bodies up front. from what you've seen on film so far in the last few years, would you prefer moving Jack Conklin to right guard and him kind of being like our Zach Martin of the offensive line, like the Dallas Cowboys right guard, and keeping Dennis Kelly at right tackle?
For me, that would have to be a consideration. And again, I think that the number one determining factor will be Jack's injury and how he comes back off of that. If, in fact, he's going to struggle like he did part of the year last year, then I think you could probably move him into guard, let him put some more of those pounds back on, and you would have a really, really good guard. And we know Kelly can play right tackle, and Kelly, seems to athletically be able to handle all that. If Jack can remain or go back to the Jack he was as a rookie, then I would leave Jack at right tackle, and we're just going to have to go find a right guard someplace.
If you were to move Jack Conklin to right guard, what is that discussion like with him? Do you think there's a little bit of ego there from Jack Conklin saying, I'm a right tackle, I'm going to stay at right tackle? Or
yeah, maybe. I think, and they may not want to admit it, but most of the time players look at themselves enough and realize that, hey, you know, I used to be able to shuffle out and cut that guy off, and I can't get there anymore. You know, I'm too slow. And I think the risk of them getting embarrassed staying out there is a scarier proposition than them moving positions.
Interesting. So then how would that impact Nate Davis as a rookie if you move Conklin to guard and your future guards are already set for a long time with Saffold and Conklin?
Yeah, I mean, he would have to be a backup, or he was a tackle in college. Maybe he becomes a tackle. Yeah. Who knows?
Good point. Ray wants to ask Floyd a question and ask the GM. Ray, welcome into 102.5 The Game.
Hey, thanks, guys. Afternoon, gentlemen. So I love everything that's been going on. I just wanted to take a different spin.
Thank you.
In regards to my questions, or my question. So, hypothetical situation, for the rest of your life, would you rather have legs as accordions for the rest of your life or the neck of a giraffe? I'll hang up and listen. Thank you for the time, you guys.
Legs of an accordion. Or the neck of a giraffe. That is points for creativity.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I'll have to go with the neck of a giraffe because I've already got legs of an accordion. So
wow. That was a that was an interesting question.
Unique.
Good one there, Ray. Let's go to Todd. Wants to ask about a potential new stadium. Todd, welcome in to Ask the GM.
Hey, guys. Thank you. I appreciate your letting me talk. Floyd, what I was wanting to ask you is this. Building a new stadium here, yes, it's got possibilities of bringing the Super Bowl and a bunch of other events. But, you know, when we voted for the Titans to come to Tennessee, of course, Davidson County, which is where the Titans stadium is at, they voted against it. They didn't want the Titans here because of the tax increases. So how would you go about building a brand new stadium and tearing that one down when we used to be the best stadium? It was the hardest stadium in the NFL to come play in, and now it's just a stadium that we can't even hardly fill up, that when they show it on TV, they just show the lower bowl area of it. So my question to you is, how would you go about building a brand new stadium and presenting it to the state of Tennessee without us having to raise taxes?
Good question,
to build
Todd.
That stadium?
Yeah, good question. And to be honest with you, Todd, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if you would have to do it with bonds. I don't know, you know, all of the tools that they use. I understand taxpayers being fed up with increasing tax in any way, shape, or form. I completely understand all that. And if, in fact, things like that don't work out, then it doesn't work out. You move on and do something else. I just think, and I guess my whole point about the new stadium was more along the lines of, if, in fact, this is what we want to do, I just don't want to miss out on the opportunity. And that was kind of the crux of my whole discussion. Is the position we're in is a unique position right now. It may only be this unique for the next, I don't know, X number of years. And you don't want to get to, you know, the last of those years and say, hey, we want NASCAR. We want to go ahead and build a track and bring in NASCAR. Well, that's too late. NASCAR's already moved to, you know, Birmingham or someplace they found another city, and you missed out on that. I just want to make sure that we don't do that. But I can understand every bit of the concern over taxes and the problems. And I don't know how many tools that they have at their disposal to use to help all the taxpayers out on those things. I'm sure there are a number. I just don't know what they are.
Last question of Ask the GM for Floyd Reese. We'll go to Butch, Mr. Brick by Brick. Butch, welcome in to Ask the GM.
Yes, sir.
Hello, guys.
Yes. Butch?
So, I know this Marcus year that he needs to improve and stuff, but what if a situation happens to where almost what happened in Philly, where Marcus improves this year, plays a lot better, but in let's say game 12, 13 goes down to injury again, Tannehill comes in, leads the team to playoffs, win a couple playoff games, that come a quarterback situation like it did in Philadelphia? And I'll hang up and listen.
Interesting question there, Butch.
Yeah, interesting question. I would guess if Marcus went ahead and played well the 10 or 12 games that he did play or whatever that number you threw out there, that Marcus would still be the guy. That's just a gut feeling by me. I think similar to what they did with Wentz at Philadelphia, you know, as good as the backup was, I think in their mind they thought, okay, Wentz is going to be the guy and will be the guy for the future. You know, I think a lot of things factor into that. I think, you know, first of all, they've already both Foles and Tannehill have already had a shot at another contract. They're already a little bit older. You know, they're 5 or 6 years older than these young guys, which means that, you know, you would be looking for a quarterback 5 or 6 years earlier than maybe you want to. So I would think if that were the case, it would stay pretty much the same. Now, if for those first 10 or 12 games, Marcus was pretty average, and, you know, was still a question, then, yeah, you could really create a controversy there.
That will do it for Ask the GM, brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors of Nashville. Some good questions over the last couple segments, Floyd. Ian, who is the winner of the Michael Bublé tickets?
Me and John back here. We like Todd. We liked Butch. But we're going to go with Scott, the quarterback Frankenstein.
All right. The combination of the legs, the arm, the brain,
good
the
question.
Vision.
Yeah.
So,
good question.
Congratulations, Scott. You will be going to Bridgestone Arena July 19th to see Michael Bublé in concert. Coming up next, we will dive into the topic in which we started the show. How does the National Hockey League and other sports leagues fix what seems to be a never-ending maybe crisis, for lack of a better word, with their officiating? We'll get into that next. He's Floyd Reese, the GM. I'm Ryan Porth, in for Jared Stillman this evening on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app.
Meyer sends in front. Nyquist, Erik Karlsson, shot, score! Erik Karlsson gets the shot away. It might have been tipped in front, and it is a Sharks 5-4 win. But the Blues are protesting. They say that might have been gloved in the net. So hold on, folks. This one might not be over.
No, they did not call a hand pass here, folks. They did not call a hand pass. Nobody called it. It wasn't blown dead. They can't call this back. This cannot be challenged. This game is over. This was a hand pass by Timo Meier that doesn't get picked up. And Nyquist shuffles it over after the hand pass from Timo Meier. But they did not call it a hand pass. This cannot come back.
Well, we weren't playing handball, were we? So we're playing hockey. I think, you know, we deserve to win this game. And at the end of the day, I think that neither team, you know, drew the shortest stick on any of the calls out there. So it's a fair game.
Welcome back into the show. Ryan Porth in for Jared Stillman this evening alongside the GM, Floyd Reese. Floyd, if anyone's been on social media in the last 19 hours or so, they know the outrage on social media is over the conclusion of Game 3 of the Western Conference Final last night, Blues-Sharks in St. Louis, where the Sharks win it in overtime, 5-4. You heard the call there from the Sharks radio network where it appeared Timo Meier, not appeared, he did. He hand-passed the puck over to Gustav Nyquist. Nyquist gives it to Erik Karlsson. Karlsson scores. And the amount of outrage for the next 90 seconds on the ice there in St. Louis was fascinating. It was in the moment, live, you're trying to figure everything out of, okay, was it a hand pass? Yes. Did it hit a stick or a leg of a Blues player before Nyquist touched it? We don't know. Could the NHL review it? No. The NHL could not review that play, even though it was a game-deciding play in overtime. And that's not to say the St. Louis Blues would have gone on to win, but they lost, and it was because of that play that should be reviewable, that a lot of people think should be reviewable, including myself. And we started the show this way, and that play last night, I think, is going to accentuate the importance of the National Hockey League figuring something out this offseason. And the next competition committee meeting is June 11th in Toronto, and maybe something is solidified then, maybe later on in the summer. But something has to be done with the review system, because that system, to me, is broken. When you can challenge an offsides that you can't even tell on HDTV whether a player's skate blade is onside, offside, on the ice, off the ice, whatever, whereas you can't review an obvious hand pass that almost everybody in the crowd, especially after replay, everybody at home saw it, especially with the benefit of replay, when the officials on the ice, who all missed the call, do not have the benefit of that replay,
mm-hmm.
the same benefit that the fans do at home. There's got to be something done about it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there'll be outrage, and I'm sure there'll be a lot of discussion about what they can and can't do. And I'm just going to guess this because of the sheer number of rules, that maybe changing a rule or changing a replay in the NHL is a lot easier than the NFL. Again, just because of the number of penalties and things, you know, that you can have in football. I mean, it's endless. And maybe you can do that. I know in the NFL, I mean, this has been a long, drawn-out process, and I'm not sure they've come up with a solution yet. But they claim to. The sad part about all of these sports, both of these sports, and really we've seen, like you mentioned before, a couple of times. I mean, we've seen this at the Kentucky Derby, you know, where a ref somewhere along the line is determining the outcome of all of these events. And if in fact somebody was cheated out of a win, then I'm all for getting it straight, you know, getting it corrected. I think the question is, if it's not, and if you're, are you willing to spend the same amount of time and effort to verify your call? And whether or not, you know, I'm good with it and we're going to stay with it or not. And then, you know, if you open it up, do you open it up to everything? Because this time it was a handshake. You know, next time it's going to be I don't know what it could be, well, something different.
Right. And look at the San Jose Sharks and the benefit that they've had by these controversial calls in each of the first three rounds. And who knows, they could have another one before winning a Stanley Cup. But Game 7 of Round 1 against Vegas, where they're down 3-0, and there is a major penalty called on Vegas with, I don't know, 12, 13 minutes left in the third period. The game seemed to be over. A major penalty that was highly questionable, and the Sharks go on and score 4 power play goals in that mm-hmm. 5 minutes. And that game swung because of that major penalty.
Oh, without a doubt.
And if the refs had the benefit of review, I would probably say that it would not have been a major penalty, and they would have maybe called it a 2-minute minor or nothing at all.
Yeah.
They were basically penalizing the result and not the act. Mm-hmm. You have round 2, game 7, where it was offsides, where the Colorado player, Gabriel Landeskog, is going off the ice, and it is completely away from the play, having zero effect at all. And the Sharks challenge for offsides. Kudos to them. It's in the rule book. They can do it. Landeskog was a smidge offsides. And what was a 2-2 game turned into 2-1 Sharks. And then the Sharks immediately thereafter scored to make it 3-1 instead of it being tied 2-2. A huge swing in that game. And then you have the game, or the moment last night in overtime. I mean, the Sharks have been pretty darn lucky in these playoffs.
What's that, 3 games, huh?
Right.
2 games. 3 huge
and huge moments. 2 yeah. game 7s and an overtime of a Western Conference final. And to your point of it could be something next. It's been 3 different things.
Yeah.
A major penalty, an offside challenge, and a hand pass that was not reviewable. Who knows what it could be in the Stanley Cup final? And unfortunately the NHL can't put anything into motion or into play between now and the end of the Stanley Cup final. It has to come in the offseason. So the NHL has egg on their face today. And who knows if anything else like this happens between now and the end of this. And if it does, it's just going to get worse for the National Hockey League. And for me, the biggest head scratcher is the fact that we have no idea what the refs on the ice were debating last night in overtime. When that goal happens, the Sharks win 5-4. And it's obvious from the moment that puck enters the net that the Blues knew something was up, that there was a hand pass. And the refs go over there and they convene, all four of them. And after about a minute, minute and a half, they're like, you know, there's nothing we can do about it. We're going to go with the call on the ice. And all of a sudden there's outrage inside Enterprise Center. And we have no idea because they can't talk.
Yeah, it seems to me, and I don't want to speak for you, but it seems to me that had you been privy to that little conversation, that it would have made all the world, you know, a world of difference for you. If they would have just told you, hey, this is what we saw, this is what we called, this is why we called it, some kind of an explanation, some kind of an explanation of what it was that they saw or didn't see.
Right.
And why?
Well, the ref, who should have made the call, in my opinion, was in position to make that call, but he was blocked by a couple players and could not see Timo Meier commit the hand pass. Who knows what the other three refs are looking at or doing,
yeah.
But if any of them saw the hand pass, they would have said there was a hand pass. It was obvious all four of them missed it, and it's not like other leagues allow their refs to speak. This is something that is common within sports that I feel like should change. And Ben Fredrickson, a columnist for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, who just torched the National Hockey League and the officials in a column this morning, had a pretty good idea that I agree with. He says the league should put an on-ice official on the stage in the post-game press conference room if there is a consensus among the media covering the game that a play needs to be addressed. If the officials won't agree, get new ones. And if the officials are up there, or one official representing the entire group is up there answering questions, saying, look, we all missed the call, it's not reviewable, and it's unfortunate, we admit we missed the call, and we apologize to the Blues and their fans, blah, 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 blah. It doesn't change the outcome, but I think you get a better sense of where their head's at. You don't know, though, if they were debating down there on the ice, if the puck, which was batted by Timo Meier, if it then hit his stick or Jay Bouwmeester's leg en route to Gustav Nyquist. If it hits either of those, it nullifies the hand pass. And the goal is legal.
So they could have said that to you.
They could have said that.
When they said what happened, you go, hey, it hit him in the leg.
Right. That's what we've determined.
Oh, okay.
But we have no idea.
Yeah.
We have no idea. And just gauging by the Blues players' responses on the ice, I would venture to guess they were debating whether or not anyone saw the hand pass, because they're all like, it was a hand pass. And then the officials just skate right down off the ice, and that was that. And it's unfortunate, and the National Hockey League has to do something about it. There's a solution that I have for the National Hockey League that I think would help this. But it's not like the National Hockey League is the only one going through this, because, as you pointed out at the start of the show, this is similar in your world to the pass interference call that was not called in the Saints-Rams NFC Championship game back in January, which may have cost the Saints a trip to the Super Bowl. So we'll get into all of that coming up next. I'm Ryan Porth, in for Jared Stillman, 615-737-1025, if you want to call in and weigh in on Replay in Sports, if you have a reaction to last night's finish in St. Louis. Where do you stand on that line in that gray area, which it's a pretty large gray area when it comes to replay in sports? I'm Ryan Porth. He's Floyd Reese. You're listening to ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app.
Yes, there's a different set of rules for two different teams, so I'm sure they'll lose some sleep tonight after looking at it, but that's all I'm going to say about it.
Did you see a hand pass?
I said that's all I'm going to say about it.
That was Blues captain Alex Pietrangelo last night after Game 3 of the Western Conference Final, in which the Blues lost due to a controversial, obvious hand pass that was not called nor reviewable that the Sharks committed, leading the Sharks to a 5-4 victory in overtime. And the Sharks now lead the series 2-1. And Floyd, last night after the game, Jeremy Rutherford of The Athletic caught up with Kay Whitmore. Kay Whitmore is the NHL series director, so he's basically representing the National Hockey League within that series. And Whitmore was asked, was it a hand pass? Kay Whitmore, it is a non-reviewable play, end quote.
Thank you.
Jeremy Rutherford, did any of the officials see it? Kay Whitmore, it's a non-reviewable play. You can read between the lines. You can figure out what you want. You watch the video, but it's not. It's just non-reviewable. I know that sounds like a cop-out answer, but that's the truth, end quote. And, I mean, you just read all the Kay Whitmore quotes, and there's nothing of substance coming from the National Hockey League out of last night. Now, Jeremy Rutherford did talk to Bill Daly, deputy commissioner of the National Hockey League, and Bill Daly said, quote, "It was an unfortunate miss by our on-ice officials. They were among our most highly performance-rated officials in our league this year. Mistakes happen, and I think everyone involved on both teams and with the league understand that. Can we create a better mousetrap to minimize either the incidents or impact of those mistakes? That's what our competition committee, our GMs, and ultimately our board will have to figure out. For now, we will turn the page and move on," end quote, Bill Daly, on last night's hand pass fiasco.
We had a case when I was coaching at Detroit where a team last field goal of the game. I mean, you know, you make it, you win. You don't make it, you lose. And the team that we were playing came through and blocked the field goal. Well, they had 12 guys on the field, and everybody knew it. Everybody was screaming it. Everybody went wild. They quickly ran a bunch of guys onto the field after the game so they couldn't count, but it was obvious. We sent it to the league, and I remember the league coming back saying, in fact, the guy called me from the league. I can't remember who it was. Called me from the league and was laughing about it. It's kind of like, oh, I saw that. 12 guys. No wonder they blocked it. I mean, 12 guys. You can't block 12 guys. And he's laughing. And I go, you know what? We might all get fired because of that play. Is that funny? You know, are you laughing now? I mean, yeah. They don't realize sometimes the impact those single plays can have on a career.
Well, to that point, Craig Berube is an interim coach for the St. Louis Blues. What if the Blues have some other guy in mind, but if Craig Berube makes it to the Stanley Cup final, then he gets his job?
Oh, yeah.
He gets that job full time. Yeah. What if? I'm not saying that's a fact, but if that is the game that swings the series in the Sharks' favor, then what you just laid out there in hypothetical to the NFL official is real life for the St. Louis Blues.
And that's why, I mean, I think those guys, sometimes those league guys don't understand the impact. I mean, they can treat it very impersonally because to them it is impersonal. It's just another team playing, you know, another team, and there's a penalty and it's non-reviewable. That's the end of it. Okay, thanks. What about all the great hockey fans in St. Louis? What about all the great, you know, throughout the country that saw that and are very, very upset? You know, it seems like there ought to be somebody, some way that they could, as you pointed out, address the hockey public and say, hey, here's what happened. We're sorry. We're going to try our best to get it fixed and go from there. But those discussions didn't seem very personal.
So here is a solution that I have for the National Hockey League to fix, moving forward, starting next season, to fix what happened last night and some of these other situations that are not reviewable. On scoring plays, just review all scoring plays like they do in the National Football League. You and I talked about that earlier in the show. But, you know, there are approximately 30 to 40 seconds between a goal being scored and the puck being dropped. And once the puck is dropped, the goal is official and everything. Which is similar to the National Football League, in which they review all scoring plays, all touchdowns. In those 30 to 40 seconds, they determine whether or not the ball crossed the line. Or they determine whether or not the scoring play is in question. We need to review it.
Right.
Right? I've got to believe there's a way the National Hockey League can have someone dedicated to every single game, every single night in the Toronto War Room that is watching it closely, that within the 30 to 40 seconds after a goal is scored, they can buzz down to ringside at center ice and say, hey, we need to pause the game, get the officials over here. There's a review to be had because of a hand pass, because of a high stick, because of a kicking motion, whatever. And if they miss it all in those 30 to 40 seconds, that's on the National Hockey League. that they missed it, whatever it may be. But for where you can challenge an offsides and whether or not something that happened 40 seconds before a goal was barely offsides or not, for you to be able to challenge that and not review an obvious hand pass or to determine whether it was a hand pass where Timo Meier knocks it into the center of the ice and it may have hit a stick, it may have hit Jay Bomeister's leg. Like, you can't review it. That, to me, is the biggest part of last night's fiasco. Not the fact that the officials, all four of them, missed the call on the ice in terms of seeing it live. It's the fact that the National Hockey League doesn't have a system in place where you can go review it.
Yeah. And I understand that. And it makes sense. And I think that's true of all sports, you know?
I mean, how many touchdowns in the NFL do we see happen and they don't review it, and then a replay comes out the next quarter and says, oh, well, his foot was actually out of bounds?
Oh, yeah.
Never.
Yeah.
But used to
all the time, but you're right, now it's nothing.
When everything is under review, and look, if it's a clean touchdown, they don't stop the game. They just let you go out and kick the extra point. If it's a clean goal, then don't stop the play. Go out there and drop the puck and continue on with the game. That is my official proposal to the National Hockey League to get this right.
Write it up. We'll vote on it.
Okay. Are you going to vote yes?
Sure.
Awesome. Ian, are you going to vote yes?
For sure.
Okay. Awesome. Floyd, it's been fun.
Yes.
As it always is to sit in with you. Tomorrow it will be Corey Curtis of News 2 in studio with you.
All right.
So that should be a lot of fun. Don't forget, pregame with Chase McCabe is coming up next. He will lead you into Bruins Hurricanes coverage. Puck drop of that game 4 is shortly after 7 o'clock. And then pregame coverage of Blazers Warriors game 2 of the Western Conference Final in the NBA on 94.9 Game 2 starting at 7. We will talk to you tomorrow at 2 o'clock.
Thanks, Ray.